Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, False Advertising Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 12, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Palm Wonderful LLC v. the Coca-Cola Company. This case involves the Lanham Act, which allows individuals to sue for harms resulting from misleading representations of goods or services in commerce. The question in this case is whether a private party can bring a Lanham Act claim challenging a product label that complies with regulations under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held that competitors may bring Lanham Act claims that challenge food and beverage labels regulated by the FDCA. Justice Breyer took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. The decision of the Ninth Circuit was reversed. To discuss the case, we have Professor William Kratzky, who is the Cecil C. Humphreys Professor of Law at the University of Memphis Cecil C. Humphreys School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Kratzky.
In the case of Palm Wonderful LLC versus the Coca-Cola Company, the Supreme Court decided on June 12, 2014, that an FDA labeling regulation does not preclude a Section 43A Lanham Act claim. Two federal statutes that putatively establish different standards arguably govern the manner of naming and labeling a juice product. The Supreme Court eschewed application of any rule of statutory construction to resolve this putative conflict, instead holding that there is no conflict and that the statutes actually complement each other. The petitioner plaintiff is a maker of juices who sued a competing juice maker under Section 43A, claiming that the competitor labels its juice product in a manner that FDA regulations authorize, but which nevertheless falsely represent the nature, characteristics, or qualities of the products. The statutory background of the case is something like this. Section 43A of the Lanham Act provides a private right of action in federal court in favor of a competitor against another who falsely represents the nature, characteristics, or qualities of his products when that competitor believes the misrepresentation is likely, proximately, to cause injury to the competitor's commercial interest in reputation or sales. Congress enacted the Lanham Act in 1946. The Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act regulates, among other things, the labeling of food and beverages. Congress enacted the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act in 1938 and amended it in the Nutrition, Labeling, and Education Act of 1990. The Act prohibits the misbranding of food, and food includes drinks. Food is misbranded if a label is false or misleading in any particular. Food is also misbranded if information whose disclosure is required is not sufficiently conspicuous to render it likely to be read and understood by the ordinary individual under customary conditions of purchase and use. Of critical importance to this case is that only the United States may enforce the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act. There are no private claims. The Nutrition, Labeling, and Education Act of 1990 provides, among other things, that state laws are preempted if they establish any standard other than that established under the FDCA for the labeling of foods. Another important point. FDA regulations authorize beverage producers to give a descriptive name to a juice that accurately describes the basic nature of the food or its characterizing properties. The name does not have to name the predominant juices in a blend, so long as the name specifically shows that the juice with the represented flavor is used as a flavor, for example, a raspberry-flavored apple and pear juice drink. An FDA labeling regulation prescribes only that the font size in which the fact of flavoring is disclosed must be at least half the size of the font used to name the characterizing flavor. Now for the case. Palm Wonderful LLC markets pomegranate juice and pomegranate juice blends. Coca-Cola markets under its Minute Maid brand a juice that it labels thus: pomegranate blueberry flavored blend of five juices. Coca-Cola's product contains 99.4% apple and grape juice, 0.3% pomegranate juice, 0.2% blueberry juice, and 0.1% raspberry juice. Palm Wonderful believes that it has lost sales to Coca-Cola because Coca-Cola's name and label contain material misrepresentations, and so Palm sued under Section 43A. Palm alleged that Coca-Cola led customers to believe that its juice consists primarily of pomegranate and blueberry juices, when in fact it consists overwhelmingly of apple and grape juices. Palm claimed that Coca-Cola's presentation on the label was misleading in several particulars not relevant here. The United States Federal District Court for the Central District of California granted Coca-Cola's motion to dismiss, holding that Palm's claim was barred because it may be construed as impermissibly challenging FDA regulations that do permit the name and label that Coca-Cola uses. The court held that under FDA regulations, Coca-Cola could identify its beverages with a non-primary characteristic juice. Any further determination that naming and labeling must be displayed in a particular way or fashion must be made by the FDA. The United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit followed its own precedent on the question and affirmed with respect to Palm's Lanham Act claim, saying, "The FDA, for its part, has promulgated regulations that address how a manufacturer may name and label its juice beverages." The Ninth Circuit viewed the case as involving two federal statutes whose application to the facts would lead to different results. The Ninth Circuit noted that when two statutes potentially conflict, courts try to give as much effect to both statutes as possible, and in that effort, courts have focused on Congress's decision to entrust to the FDA the task of interpreting and enforcing the Federal Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act. And in light of that focus, courts have agreed that the FDCA limits claims under the Lanham Act. In the view of the Ninth Circuit, what the FDA specifically authorizes and what the statute empowers the FDA to regulate, even if the FDA chooses not to exercise that authority, with respect to juice labeling are off limits to a Lanham Act plaintiff. The Ninth Circuit applied, in essence, a rule of field preclusion. Lanham Act claims are precluded in the entire field of FDA authority. On appeal, the Supreme Court granted cert to resolve questions concerning the preclusive scope of FDA naming and labeling regulations. The court received briefs from many parties with an interest in the outcome of the case, and it heard oral arguments on behalf of Palm, Coca-Cola, and the United States government. The respondent Coca-Cola's arguments in its brief and oral argument were roughly thus: the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act of 1990, which amended the FDCA and authorized the rulemaking in this case, narrows the application of the earlier enacted statute, namely the Lanham Act. The intent to narrow the Lanham Act is manifested by an overriding congressional intent to achieve uniformity in the food and juice naming and labeling area and to bar private lawsuits that would undermine that uniformity. We know this because delegation of exclusive enforcement authority to the FDA is a manifestation of the intent. Coca-Cola argued that the goal of achieving uniformity has led courts to bar private causes of action when the uniformity goal is revealed by a provision that expressly preempts state lawsuits, even when silent as to the narrowing or preclusion of federal lawsuits. The FDCA bars private enforcement of the FDCA. Congress's evident purpose was to allow food and juice manufacturers to comply with a single standard nationwide, and private state law claims would disrupt that scheme. And it is appropriate to conclude that Congress intended the same for Section 43 Lanham Act claims. Coca-Cola also argued that the specificity of the food and juice naming and labeling provisions show that Congress intended to preclude a Lanham Act claim in the circumstances here. And Coca-Cola argued that the existence of some discretion to choose a nationally uniform label does not indicate congressional or FDA intent to allow private plaintiffs to invoke Section 43A. The Coca-Cola company also argued that the FDA does not lack adequate enforcement resources. In any event, what Palm should do is to complain to the FDA, not to sue in, under Section 43A. Coca-Cola argued that the interest in national uniformity should allow the FDA to define what is and implicitly what is not misbranding and not have that reviewed in cases brought under the Lanham Act. The United States filed a brief in support of neither party and participated in oral argument, and its argument was essentially this, that the FDCA expresses its relationship to state laws but not federal laws. Palm's Lanham Act claim is barred only to the extent the FDCA or FDA regulations specifically require or authorize the challenged aspects of Coca-Cola's juice label. The regulations specifically permit the name of the juice here. The naming regulations reflect the agency's balance of competing considerations, which could easily be upset by intrusion of a general private remedy. The United States argued or noted that the FDA had adopted this rule after extensive rulemaking proceedings. And so the regulation does not merely provide a floor that can be supplemented by federal courts in Lanham Act cases. The FDCA is a narrow provision, the United States argued. The more specific should control the more general. And the juice naming regulations are even more specific than the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act. Compliance with the juice naming regulations makes the name non-misleading, the United States argued. But Palm's claim should be permitted insofar as it challenges the features of the juice's label not specifically required or authorized by the FDCA or FDA regulations. Neither the FDCA nor FDA regulations purport to occupy the field of juice labeling. The United States argued that Palm's claim should not be precluded insofar as it alleges that a label is misleading because of the presentation of the words. If a label is specifically permitted, then a Lanham Act claim is precluded. But if the FDA has not addressed an issue, then a Lanham Act claim is not precluded. In such a case, a court would not be second-guessing any FDA judgment. A regulation might preclude the name of a juice from being the subject of a Lanham Act claim, yet not preclude a claim based on the presentation of the name on a label. The question would turn, in the view of the United States, on whether a Lanham Act claim would actually conflict with what the FDA has already actually done. And courts may interpret FDA regulations. This is not an area of primary jurisdiction-like doctrine where this would apply. Federal district courts, according to the United States, can determine whether a juice label complies with FDA regulations, and if the label does not comply, a 43A action would be available. The United States also argued that when the FDA adopted the name regulation, it did consider matters of consumer confusion and concluded that consumers, in fact, care more about the flavor of the juice than its contents. The regulation is one that deals with misbranding, and over time, consumers will come to recognize that the identification of a particular flavor in a juice does not mean that the juice contains any given percentage of that juice that describes the flavor. Basically, the parties presented three choices to the court. Palm Wonderful would argue that the FDCA regulations and the Lanham Act are not in conflict at all. It's possible to comply with both statutes and that the FDA regulations create a standard that is merely a floor. The government argued that the FDCA regulations govern only what they specifically address. They specifically address naming and some aspects of labeling. Other representations, even those derivative of naming and labeling, are subject to federal court scrutiny in a 43A action. Coca-Cola's position was that the FDCA and the FDA regulations govern not only what they specifically address, but also what they might have addressed but have chosen not to. What I surmise from the course of the oral argument and the questions that the justices asked in oral argument is something like this. The court never really viewed the cases involving two statutes whose application lead to conflicting results. The questions of the justices did not concern that at all. Rather, they involved policy, and very little of that was directed at the need for uniformity in juice labeling standards. Justices clearly were more concerned about a policy of protecting consumers from deception. The questions of the justices also seem to manifest a concern with the workability of rules that might take a middle ground. Justice Kagan asked whether the government's position doesn't accord too much importance to FDA process to determine what the FDA actually considered in its rulemaking. Justice Ginsburg and Chief Justice Roberts expressed concern that the FDA rules are not subject to any meaningful review if private parties cannot bring Lanham Act claims. And the justices did not seem to accept that the proper course of remedying deceptive implementation of an FDA regulation is to go to the FDA itself. Justices Ginsburg and Kennedy acknowledged the lack of sufficient FDA enforcement resources. The court held squarely for POM. The court adopted most of the contentions that the petitioner POM made and said, and I quote, in an opinion by Justice Kennedy, it was 8-0, by the way. Quote, there is no statutory text or established interpretive principle to support the contention that the FDCA precludes Lanham Act suits like the one brought by POM in this case. Nothing in the text, history, or structure of the FDCA or the Lanham Act shows the congressional purpose or design to forbid these suits. Quite to the contrary. The FDCA and the Lanham Act complement each other in the federal regulation of misleading food and beverage labels. Competitors in their own interest may bring Lanham Act claims like POMS that challenge food and beverage labels that are regulated by the FDCA, end quote. The court noted that the FDCA statutory regime is designed primarily to protect the health and safety of the public at large. The FDA does not pre-approve juice labels under its regulations. Private parties may not bring claims to enforce the FDCA or its regulations. The FDCA preempts some state laws on misbranding, but it does not address or refer to federal statutes or preclusion of them. The court observed that the case is not a preemption case. Rather, it raises the question of whether one federal statute precludes a cause of action under another federal statute. It is rather a case of statutory interpretation, even though more than one federal statute is involved, and even though a federal agency is involved. The court summarized the arguments of POM and Coca-Cola. POM argued that the FDCA does not implicitly repeal any part of the Lanham Act unless the statutes are in irreconcilable conflict, and there is no such irreconcilable conflict. Coca-Cola argued that the more specific statute narrows the more general statute, and the court came down squarely on the side of POM, observing that, first, neither the Lanham Act nor the FDCA by their text limit the applicability of the Lanham Act's comprehensive imposition of liability. Second, the two statutes have coexisted for 70 years, and Congress could have made adjustments between the two statutes but did not. Congress addressed preemption of state laws, but not preclusion of federal statutes. And the court said, quote, this is powerful evidence that Congress did not intend FDA oversight to be the exclusive means of ensuring proper food and beverage labeling. By taking care to mandate express preemption of some state laws, Congress, if anything, did not intend the FDCA to preclude requirements arising from other sources, end quote. Third, the Lanham Act and the FDCA are complementary. The Lanham Act protects commercial interests against unfair competition, and the FDCA protects public health and safety. And the court would disregard congressional intent if it held that one statute precluded enforcement of the other. Fourth, the remedial schemes of the statutes are different. The FDA alone enforces the FDCA. The FDA lacks the perspective in assessing market dynamics that day-to-day competitors possess. Whereas Lanham Act suits draw upon the market expertise of competitors by permitting them to sue competitors to protect their interests. A holding that FDCA regulations preclude Lanham Act claims would create a result that Congress did not intend. The FDA does not pre-approve food labels as it does other types of labels. Instead, it apparently relies on enforcement actions, warning letters, and other measures. And the FDA does not address every objectionable food label. Quote, if Lanham Act claims were to be precluded, then commercial interests, and indirectly the public at large, could be left with less effective protection in the food and beverage labeling realm than in many other less regulated industries. It is unlikely that Congress intended the FDCA's protection of health and safety to result in less policing of misleading food and beverage labels than in competitive markets for other products, end quote. The court went on to reject each of Coca-Cola's contentions. Coca-Cola had argued that preclusion was necessary for national uniformity in food and beveraging labeling requirements. But, said the court, exclusive FDCA authority to enforce the FDA and its regulations does not establish that Congress intended to foreclose private enforcement. And the preemption provision of the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act of 1990 applies only to certain state laws and not to federal laws. Moreover, said the court, it is not clear that Congress desired the monolithic uniformity for which Coca-Cola argued. Congress often permits some variability by authorizing a federal cause of action even when uniformity is important. And the Lanham Act is, in fact, an illustration of this. Lanham Act actions are a means to implement a uniform policy to prohibit unfair competition in all covered markets. The specificity of FDA regulations would matter only if the Lanham Act and the FDCA cannot be implemented at the same time, but neither the statutory structure nor the empirical evidence of which the court is aware indicates there will be any difficulty in fully enforcing each statute according to its terms. The court also rejected each of the government's contentions. The government argued that a Lanham Act claim is precluded to the extent the FDA regulations specifically require or authorize the challenge aspects of the label. This would immunize the name of Coca-Cola's product, but not the presentation aspects of Coca-Cola's label. But the court simply said that Congress intended the Lanham Act and the FDCA to complement each other. The government argued that the FDA's rulemaking reflected the agency's weighing of competing interests. But the court observed that the rulemaking proceeding did not refer to the Lanham Act. There is insufficient information to indicate how the FDA wanted its rule to interact with other federal laws, particularly that it would want its regulation to have preclusive effect. Ultimately, the holding is this, that competitors may bring a Lanham Act Section 43A claim irrespective of whether an FDA regulation authorizes a particular name and label of a juice product. I have some first take comments on the case. Obviously, firms such as Palm Wonderful may now sue makers of juices for deceptive naming and labeling, irrespective of whether those makers' names and labels comply with FDA rules. That fact alone should encourage makers of juice blends to name and label either a little bit more forthrightly and or to increase the amount of a named juice in a juice blend. But perhaps the biggest loser in the case was the FDA itself. To the extent that the FDA would have defended the position that a juice blend could bear the name of two juices when it contains 0.3% of one and 0.2% of the other, it has clearly lost. The FDA naming and labeling rules establish only a floor, and the FDA standards are probably so far below the standards of federal courts applying Section 43A that FDA standards will rarely govern what juice makers actually do when naming and labeling their products. Years of FDA rulemaking in this area essentially establish nothing that is meaningful. Consequence, the United States argued that over time, consumers will come to recognize that the identification of a particular flavor in a juice does not mean that the juice contains any given percentage of that juice that describes the flavor. If indeed consumers care more about flavor than precise content, that concern is unlikely to be controlling or even relevant in the context of a 43A claim between market participants. And a final comment is this. This case is one of two that the Supreme Court heard this term concerning whether one who alleges commercial injury may sue under Section 43A of the Lanham Act. In Lexmark International Inc. versus Static Control Components, decided March 25, 2014, the court broadened the class of commercial plaintiffs entitled to sue to any who can allege that a violation of Section 43A proximately caused them injury to a commercial interest in reputation or sales.
The Supreme Court in that case also observed that consumers lack standing to sue under the Lanham Act. After lengthy rulemaking proceedings, the regulations of the FDA in the area of juice naming and labeling emphasize disclosure of flavoring rather than accuracy in content. Consumers might care more about flavoring than a juice's particular ingredients. And this shift was not likely to prompt juice makers themselves to seek judicial review of such regulations, particularly if the FDA does not enforce what are, in fact, very lenient standards. That leaves only private actions brought by competitors under the Lanham Act as a platform of judicial review of FDA regulations in this area. And after Palm Wonderful versus the Coca-Cola Company, we can anticipate that effective judicial review of FDA food labeling regulations will occur in the context of Section 43A Lanham Act claims.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.